The Reserve Pool, Episode 15, Gen Cant, Gen Con. Welcome back, everybody, to yet another episode of The Reserve Pool, a podcast about Dice Masters and Dice Masters accessories. There, you happy, Evan?
Yes, yes, I am.
Okay, I am Dave.
I'm Katie.
And I'm Evan.
Evan's been bugging me to do that for a while, and I finally did, so hooray. So, yes, this is that podcast about Dice Masters. We're here with you another week. Please follow us on Twitter at The Reserve Pool. Check out our website. Check out our Board Game Geek Guild. Check out the little heart on Board Game Links and check out our iTunes reviews. You know, do all that stuff because we like you and we want you to like us because we have a complex. So, please, please help. Please help. So, we have Gen Con that just happened and we didn't get to go. But luckily, we had something better. If you were following a lot of the game folks on Twitter, those who were not at Gen Con were talking a lot about Gen Cant. I know that we all participated in one way or another in Gen Cant. If you wanted to know how you participated in Gen Cant, it was simply by not going to Gen Con. So, yes, I played some games at Gen Cant, and it was a lot of fun with the Gen Cant library, which looked a lot like my own games library. How about you guys? Games, life events, what happened?
I spent most of the weekend with my sister, actually. She's doing that thing where she's getting married, so there's lots to do.
Oh, wow, that's cool.
Yeah.
The family's going to get a little larger. Awesome.
Yes. Future brother-in-law of awesome.
Does he game?
No, he bikes. Oh.
He what?
A lot. He bikes.
Oh.
He was in, like, a bike for the cure for diabetes this weekend, and he totally won.
Wow.
And so that's why my sister was around, was because fiance was out of town.
Hey, good cause. That's pretty awesome. Hey, I mean, a race, it's sort of like a game.
Sort yes.
Bro, do you even game?
It's a real-life game. That's cool. Family time is always awesome. How about you, Evan?
What did I do this weekend? Well, I had my regular Saturday evening gaming session, so there was that. We actually were playtesting a new game, so that was exciting.
Really?
It was pretty neat. You know, still, it definitely there are things that need reworking, but I'm really excited for the potential of this game.
That's cool.
A name, don't ask me.
Okay. What's the name? No, sorry. That's pretty cool. Actually, our board game group hasn't had the chance to meet for a little while. We had a lot of trouble with the summer and vacations and stuff. Like, there were some informal meetings.
Yeah, we're just getting out of that now.
Yeah, and I think we're going to have to kick that back into gear this September. It's just been a little bit too long. A little bit too long since we've gotten some of that going. And I'm looking at some games on my shelf right now as we record this that just haven't been played in a while, or some new ones that are just itching to be played. I finally got Sentinels of the Multiverse, and I'm just loving it. And you can play it with two, but then you got to control multiple characters, and for me, that ruins the immersion. You know, I like to really feel like I'm in that game, like I am that hero that I have in front of me. But true. And anything else notable other than the super secret playtested game?
No. What else? I'm trying to remember what else I played. I played some Chrononauts, which I haven't touched in a while, but it's a good, fun, quick game. It's kind of like Flux with time travel.
Oh, okay. I hadn't heard of that one.
Like playing the Lizardmen. It's Lizardmen, right? The ones who win by causing World War III?
Nuclear Roach.
Nuclear Roaches. It's a good game. Chrononauts.
Yeah,
is fantastic.
I always played with the sub-rules of you cannot take a goal card and have your goal be create the end of time by getting the 13 paradoxes. Always made things exciting.
I'm gonna have to like check this game out just for context.
It's great. Check it out.
It's pretty good. Yeah.
That's cool. The only other thing of note, I mean, we played a bit of Netrunner, which was cool. I hadn't played that for a little while. Finally got the second big box. I'm a little behind there. and picked up Spirium, which is an interesting worker placement game because it was like super cheap on Amazon, like half off. It was like $15, and I said, okay. I had heard it was good. I hadn't played it. Normally, I'd like to try a game like that first, but at $15, I figured, yeah, what the heck. So that's all. But hey, Dice Masters, right?
Yes.
What's that? I have no idea what that is.
Oh, yeah, we're talking about that, I think. So let's move on to the El Bago de Melo and talk about that for a minute. Today we have an email here from Steven, and if you, like Steven, would like to get in touch, you know, mailbag@thereservepool.com. We want to hear from you, as I point out, like the Uncle Sam posters, you. And Steven says, I found myself using Cyclops Slim the other day along with Throne Car, trying to realize his true value. And he had a couple questions about making sure that the damage was happening correctly. Here's the scenario, he says. Oh, by the way, let me say, Cyclops Slim is the one that does his full attack value to all characters that are blocking him. So if you're multi-blocking him, he's going to do his full damage to each individual character. So he declares that he's using Throne Car and gives his level 3 Cyclops Slim and another character the +1 attack bonus. He sends Cyclops Slim across to attack for 7. And my opponent blocks with 2 level 2 Beast Mutate 666. Slim deals his total attack value to each blocking character, so he'll deal 7 damage to each beast blocking him. And of course, Throne Car states, damage characters deal in excess of total defense of blocking characters is dealt to your opponent. So my question is, how do I assign the damage? First, I want to say that if you're the guy who played against him and you chose to multi-block against Slim, well, he's using Throne Car, bad idea. And I think I'll let you guys take it and tell them why.
I mean, looking in conjunction at the cards, I feel like the way it works is that all of the damage rolls over. So Beast level 2 has 3 defense, Cyclops has that 7 attack, he does 7 damage to Beast, 7 damage to the other Beast, and a total of 8 damage rolls over just because, and it's very specific to Slim. Obviously, that's not something that would happen if it were not Slim. It's pretty much the only card we have right now where that would happen. So, I mean, bad idea, as Dave said, to double block, even if it is with Beast. Obviously, they were trying to get some dice draw in there, but there are better ways, man. There are better ways.
Yeah. Eight life for 2 dice, not a good deal.
Yeah, I mean, just the way I see it, because, you know, Cyclops is kind of like he's dealing damage to both of them, unlike any other character where, the Beast would have soaked a total of 6 damage, and then there would have only been the 1 rollover damage, with Slim dealing double damage or damage to each character. Each character only... Yeah, I mean, each character has 7 damage dealt to it. Each one soaks up 3 damage, and there's 4 damage to roll over twice. So, I mean, that's just the way I see it. I suppose there could be an alternate ruling, but I really actually don't see the justification for the opposite. I don't see the justification for there only being 1 rollover damage.
Yeah, I mean, even if you're to argue that, you know, the amount of damage total done is some sort of weird pool, and it's, you know, he does 7, and there's 3 and 3 blocks, so it's only, but no, he does 7 to one and 7 to the other, and they each take away 3, and there's 4 left. So, like, I don't really see any way you can justify that somehow both beasts block in series as opposed to in parallel, which is kind of what's happening here.
Yeah, and I mean, looking at the text of Throw Car, I think it's fairly explicit because it says damage that those two characters deal in excess of the total defense of blocking characters. So Cyclops deals 7+7 damage, the defense. So I mean, it's just like, yeah, there's 3 damage, 4 damage dealt in excess to each character. That's...
Yeah, I don't see another way.
Yeah.
Unless, I mean, the interesting thing, I guess, is if you wanted a character that to use Throne Car with, where you were probably going to damage your opponent with it, I guess probably Cyclops Slim is as good as any of them, because there's really no incentive. You have a disincentive to multi-block him. So if you actually want to use it and have some damage get through to your opponent, then yeah, might as well use it on Slim. But then again, I mean, you could use Throne Car on something else that maybe does something else to all of the blockers, or for everything that he damages or whatever else. I mean, I don't know. I'm not thinking very well off the top of my head, mostly because I don't prefer Throne Car. Every time I've tried to use it, I have a hard time getting the stars to align and have Throne Car out when I want it out. That's the issue that I generally have.
Yeah, I mean, I think my problem with Throne Car is it starts at 4 cost, which is always an awkward buy, and then it needs to be out when you have a beefy character out, which doesn't always happen. So it's not a good early purchase unless you're trying to use it for energy, and there's more efficient ways to go about getting energy out of action dice. And then, I mean, it's just an awkward stepchild card, because, you know, if all of the beefier characters tend to cost about 6 or 7 to buy. So you're already having to get that, like, 6 or 7 energy together to even get a beefier character into your dice bag. And then you have to throw a car on top of that. It's kind of just an expensive set of purchases.
At least so far. I'm eagerly anticipating some things from Uncanny X-Men for that.
Yes, there was one that I made note of a little earlier in the day, so we'll talk about that in the main feature.
Though, yeah. I would note, I guess, reading Throne Car and Cyclops's, I guess, more famous version, If Looks Could Kill, since it does specifically say when attacking, wouldn't that mean his deals damage to every opposing character? Wouldn't that also get the trample effect of Throne Car? So that seems like an even more brutal play.
I'm not sure that it would actually work that way. I can see the argument, and I can see that might be a clarification that comes up, but I'm not so sure it works that way. Let me double check the specific wording of If Looks Could Kill.
It just says, when attacking, damage that those two characters deal in excess of the total defense of blocking characters is dealt to your opponent. It doesn't say that it necessarily needs to be standard attacking damage.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, he's certainly in an attacking state. I feel that it technically has an argument, and yeah, given some of the judging that we'll talk about in a little while, might have been allowed to go through at some point.
Yeah, but, I mean, this doesn't feel quite as clear cut, but I could see you making an argument for it.
Yeah, I can see the argument as well.
I think it's probably against the intent, but man, that'd be pretty crazy. So make him 7/4, and then he attacks. What if your opponent has a whole bunch of sidekicks out?
Pew, pew,
sidekicks and weenies, just, and I stomp you for 40.
Yeah,
have a nice
that's
day.
That's one hit kill.
Yeah, that's pretty brutal. So, I mean, I don't know, man. If you can get that all together, you know, more power to you. But
if it works.
Yeah, I could see it being against the intent of the card, wherein, you know, you have the Cyclops, If Looks Could Kill, it hits everyone, you know, nuke and pave, and then you deal with the excess rollover damage if blockers are assigned. I feel like that's probably more the intent.
Right. No, I'd agree with that, but you could probably twist the wording to say no.
Hey, it wouldn't be the first words that folks have twisted trying to justify one rule or another.
Yep.
And it certainly won't be the last in the history of competitive collectible trading.
Very
living
true.
Games.
Very yeah. true.
I mean, if you could trample, if you could trample twice, you would.
Oh boy. So, Katie, you alluded earlier to some stuff about a certain convention that we already talked about, so there's no use pretending to beat around the bush. Let's go ahead and talk about some of that stuff that happened with Gen Con. And once again, everybody, we remind you, mailbag@thereservepool.com. Of course, anything that you say or do can and will be used in a court. Oh, sorry. Anything you send to us may be used on the show. That's how that goes. All right, let's move on. We'll be right back.
So, Gen Con was this weekend, and I was super duper duper excited until Gen Con actually happened. I was joking before the show that we were going to do a podcast about Gen Con. What were we going to do? 40 minutes of silence. Because there really wasn't that much. Because there really wasn't that much that we learned this time around. I did a couple of really big features for San Diego Comic Con. And there was a lot of information that came out there. But we saw lots of duplicate information coming out, and I don't mean the bridge play style. I mean, just there was a lot of the same information coming out, and I was pretty disappointed about that. What did we learn? We have the big thing that we finally got, and it's on our website, and it's care of Roll for Crit, is we actually have a full list of all of the expansion pack characters now. So that was pretty cool, and it confirmed my round guesses for super rares, which was a bonus. So that was a big thing that we've got so far, is we have not the stuff that's in the starter kit, but all of the other characters we now know who they are. And Magneto was confirmed in the starter kit.
Yeah, that was pretty cool to see that information, and I'm glad they were able to get a snap of that card. WizKids was being somewhat coy in their placement of cards. They would have a spread so you can see one of them, and then everything else, you might catch a letter here or there.
And the worst part was, I think one or two of the columns, the top card was blank. I don't know if that just means that I don't know if it means that Falcon is the next Johnny Blaze. I hope not. Or it just means they didn't have the text for that particular iteration of the card out yet. But that was really disappointing.
I'd heard some hypothesizing that the lack of text on those two cost characters may make it into the final set, but that it might have been kind of in contrast to the problems that we saw in the Avengers versus X-Men set, where we have Sarina, Beast, and just those two good cost cards.
Yes, and actually, if true, that could be a sign of some lessons learned here, because really what happens, generally these games need to be played out in stages, and I, off the top of my head, as I'm thinking of just about any collectible, or of the living card games as well, right, you have your early game plays that kind of set the stage, the cards that you put out and everything like that, and it all kind of builds up to what you're actually going to unveil later on. Even some of the fast decks in like Magic the Gathering, for example, will do this. If you're like, I think back to older days, you're doing a green deck with some fast mana and you're throwing down a Land of War Elves or a Bird of Paradise to get more mana and whatever else, or anything like that. And this really lacked that. You were going for characters that were executing your strategy in like the first, second, third, fourth turn. Very, very quickly. And some of them you're getting out by the third turn. And that's just very strange. Conversely, now maybe we have the chance to see, okay, here are a couple of early game buys. These give me a chance at some energy and some chump blockers or whatever else. And then truly have more of a progression to how an actual game is going to be played. And if that's the case, then that's fantastic. And I will happily leave my Avengers versus X-Men set behind in favor of Uncanny, if that is the direction that we are indeed going.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely heard, I believe it was on Board Game Geeks, just the hypothesis of that. I mean, and I think the fact that there's no text on the cards kind of backs that up, because as Evan mentioned, Johnny Blaze is, you know, just a two-cost card with good stats.
We're all making horrible snorting noises.
Yeah. Sorry.
Oh, my. So,
what on earth? I mean, there's not even that kind of text, you know, like, you know, Falcon, you know, you'd be like, just a quick, You know, there could be text there. There's no reason not to have a little bit of text there, even if it's just like a little silly little flavor text similar to the Johnny Blaze
Falcon
text.
Punch!
No.
Oh, boy.
I'm pretty sure they don't have, like, the trademark or whatever to do that. That's an entirely different intellectual property.
Just wait for Disney to buy out Nintendo.
It'll happen someday. Yeah, so I think there's a possibility that that is the case, that they realize that two cost cards that do anything but be two cost are possibly a little too powerful.
Or have a drawback to being put out.
Yep, yes. That yes. too. Evan's a big fan of that. So
I am.
I totally appreciate that. But yes, I still think it was a really jerk move to put two of them on top regardless.
Well, yeah.
Jerk move.
And that's what I really think I want to see, because if that is, again, if that is the direction that things are going, I think it's going to be a big step forward. Because, I mean, right now there's not a lot of variation that we see, not just in playstyle, but, I mean, it's really easy to have, like, all four different kinds of energy in this game versus trying to run a deck in Magic with all five mana. Not that it hasn't been done, but you have to have certain allowances in piloting that well, you know, things like that. So I want to see some things that really change up and provide more of a rollout for the strategy in the game rather than like, bam, here we go.
Yeah. I mean, I think we're also seeing that where we've seen two versions of the Psylocke card, which are pretty much good luck being a two-cost card. So it sounds like Psylocke, and hopefully there's a couple of other cards like her, and it's not just Psylocke is the mid-game card, but just we start to see some sort of, like, the mid-game actually starts to become about stopping the early game, almost. Like, so you have your early game, which is mostly twos and threes, and then you roll into mid-game with your fours and fives, and the fours and fives kind of have a stronger advantage over the twos and threes, like the Psylocke cards, which seem to be along a theme of if you have two cost, get off the field.
Yeah, I think the early game right now is too combo-y, and it's enough to win. Mm-hmm. And what I think you really want to have is an early game that's build up and a mid game that's combo-y and you could win, or the mid game is, you know, stall and build up to the bigger guys. And what we're lacking is the ability in this game to stall to build up to the bigger guys against some of the stronger archetypes. And that's a problem. You know, I started watching a bit of the Spellslinger series on Geek and Sundry, which is where a guy, Day 9, plays Magic the Gathering with other, you know, geeky, nerdy, internet, and otherwise celebrities. Like, Grand Imahara was on there, which is awesome. Ali Brosh from Hyperbole and a Half was on a recent episode, which is really cool. Her website's great. But, you know, and they're talking about some little strategies and things that I've just forgotten over the years about it. But, like, you know, okay, so this deck uses blue to kind of stall out until you can get the big creature out from this, from the green or whatever else. And this game lacks that capacity right now. There's not a means to do that. And that's I think, where the issue is. The play style is generally fast in general, with little variation as to how you're going to be fast. And yeah. I want to see early game, mid game build up, or the ability to stall to get something big out or whatever else. That's what's going to be important. And the game's going to succeed or fail, I think, based on how they can accomplish that.
Yeah, and we're definitely seeing a couple signs of that. So I think that's good, and I do think that's a lesson learned. I also, like I said, I agree that the fact that there's complete lack of text does indicate perhaps that there used to be text, and now there isn't, as opposed to it was always meant to be empty.
Or that's just their new, like, why are we wasting ink giving it no abilities? It just doesn't have any abilities.
I don't know. I honestly figure it's just a pre-production copy.
Could be. I mean,
it's blank. I really do.
Yeah. So, also, in case you guys don't read the website, but you totally should read the website, super rares are going to be Emma Frost, Iron Man, Scarlet Witch, and Spider-Man. And I was a little annoyed that they decided to roll out Spider-Man and Iron Man as our super rares when they already were there before.
Yeah. I mean, I understand they're, you know, it's Spider-Man and Iron Man, and they're kind of, you know, big characters. You know, they had their time in the sun. And you're giving them more time in the sun by making them part of the starter set. Why not, like, let Magic or someone be it?
Yes, I know. I liked my guesses so much more. My guesses would have been more awesome, WizKids. So yeah, I mean, obviously we don't know anything about those cards specifically, but it could be interesting to see what they pull out for the super rares, since traditionally, and I guess say traditionally, even though there's only been one set, about three of the super rares were pretty decent this last time around, so with two of them being pretty standout. So we'll see if they're going to continue to do that, or if we're going to start to see some balance where the rarity doesn't actually mean goodness, just means rare.
Yeah, and I was interested also in seeing some of the cards, to shift this a little bit, that make faction a little bit more important, and we haven't seen enough to know if this is going to be, you know, rife throughout the set. But Scarlet Witch, Wanda Maximoff, 3-bolt villain. When fielded, Scarlet Witch deals 1 damage to each opposing X-Men character for each other villain you have in the field. That's pretty interesting. That makes villains more important, but it's only useful if your opponent is using a fair amount of X-Men. Now, we should have no shortage of X-Men in a set called Uncanny X-Men, but still, I like to see affiliation matter a little bit more. To this point, it's, unless you're using Nick Fury, it hasn't mattered, other than you're probably not going to want to just play villains. That's the only affiliation thing that we have. Nick Fury helps Avengers, and probably don't play all villains.
Yeah. And it'll be interesting to see if they actually do that thing where not every character, where not every card of the same character is the same faction.
Well, we know for sure that there's some variety now.
Yes,
we have seen sufficient proof to know that some cards will have different factions. So
and I can't remember what they are.
Psylocke Ninjutsu is unaligned, and Psylocke Betsy Braddock is an ex-lady. And then we have a Black Panther that is unaligned, and a Black Panther that is an Avenger. And we also have a Bishop who is an X-Man, and a Bishop who is not an X-Man. So we know for certain that we're going to see some variety. We've seen some that aren't variety, but...
Yeah, it's unfortunate we haven't seen more Emma Frost, because I think her... her super rare is arch villain, so we know that's going to be a villain.
Evan is incorrect.
Wait, I know someone had an arch villain rare.
Spider-Man has a superhero rare.
Ah, that's what I was thinking of.
Yes, Emma Frost Common is her arch villain. We should also talk about arch villains a little more. We don't know squat about them, but it seems like most of the big time villains will have a version of the card that's going to just be subtitled Arch Villain. Based on what we've seen from Sentinel and Apocalypse, it looks like they may provide some sort of, like, well-fielded bad stuff happens, which is, I think, really cool thematically. So I'm interested to see that, but I do worry, since you'll be allowed to play Avengers versus X-Men cards, presumably, I mean, at least in casual play with other people, I still worry that the Magneto Global will continue to make sad faces for all villains. Or Mjolnir.
I think some of that will change. I truly do. And that's, again, just going off of WizKids history. I mean, there's certainly, at least in the organized play, in the sanctioned stuff, it's going to be very set-based. Especially if they're going to continue to push formats like Rainbow Draft and whatever else. I really, truly do think that that's what we're going to see. And personally, from the sounds of it so far, if it's shaping up to be the kind of set that I think it's going to be, frankly, I might never touch Avengers versus X-Men again. I'm being serious.
I can hear the justification there. I do think there was some surprise on the part of WizKids about how fast the meta was. I'm pretty sure that people didn't realize, well, designing the game, especially how broken Tsarena was.
Yes.
And I mean, I know we don't like to say they're broken, but let's be honest, Beast and Tsarena,
And Johnny Storm and Gabi.
And Johnny Storm and Gabi all permanently shifted the meta to where you don't need an end game because your end game is your opening moves.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not good for a good variety of game, especially with how many high-cost characters there were in the first set. It does look like we'll continue to have some high-cost characters, although I see a lot more mid-cost, at least in the smattering that we have been exposed to. So I do hope, especially with, you know, with those two costs that don't seem to do much other than be cheap, and the kind of mid-cost that seem to be focused on smacking down weenie characters, that we'll start to see more of that rolling build-up of dice, so you end up with this huge fist of dice.
I'm hoping. It'll also make basic actions more valuable as well. I mean, it'll make them more worth purchasing if we can get away from this awkward, you need to spend, you know, the first two turns buying four as many characters as possible. I'm sorry?
You have to spend the first two turns buying your Serenas and Beasts.
Exactly, yeah. But I actually really like the arch-villain thing, and that's something I want to use, and I want to see if the heroes get an answer to that other than heroic, because one thing that I thought could really make this game cool and really help dictate play style is something like, okay, like the general in Magic's EDH format, or like the identity in Netrunner, or the warlord in the new 40K living card game, like something that gives the player unique ability that they can use to their advantage within the rest of the team, like something that you truly build around. Like Netrunner has at least a dozen identities on each of the corporation and runner sides on this point, and I think there might be even more than that. Not all are workable, but probably the majority are. And I'd love to see, like, something provide more identity to your villain team. So if there's something like, while you have this out, crazy stuff happens, and you can build synergies with whatever that crazy stuff is, that's pretty darn cool. And I just hope it really kind of permeates to the deck-building side as well, that this is something you can build around, and that there are enough of them that make it worth, like, using different ones of them, and we're not all going to see, like, say, only Apocalypse.
Yeah, definitely. I do hope we see a certain amount of that. I'm not sure, based on what we've seen, that we'll get that level, but it could be something interesting to continue to build on.
Way to build decks other than the traditional. I'm sorry,
yeah,
go ahead.
I mean, that would be nice to see some more valid strategies is really what we need to be seeing. We also got a very, very limited peek at the basic actions, which we were just talking about. We don't really know much text except for two of them. Only one of them was new. It looks like we're looking again at the 3 and 4 cost level. I haven't seen any twos. There might be one, but we've seen most of them, and they're in the 3 and 4 cost range. We did get a look at transfer power, which looks kind of nasty, so I'm pretty excited for it. It's a 3-cost action, and it lets you roll a character die from your used pile. You can field it at no cost if it rolls a character face, or it goes into your bag if it rolls energy. So that's, you know, like a really cool way to quick cycle your dice, is that transfer power. So that's going to be really fantastic, I think. As a good way, like, if you bring one or two of those into your bag earlier-ish in the game, it means, like, when you buy that 6 or 7 cost character, it's going to get back in your bag or straight onto the field much more easily. So that's super cool.
And what happens when you have that, when you've just bought that 6 or 7 cost character, you have a lot of dice in your used pile. You're probably running low in your bag. So at worst case, you're probably going to just get to draw that the next turn, more than likely. I mean, that's a whole new kind of churn, and I really kind of dig that. I think that could have a pretty, I think we're going to see that a lot, to be honest. And I like that it says field it at no cost. So clearly, unlike Rally, this is definitely definitively fielding. So if there's a neato when fielding, well, you know, when fielded ability, well, you can do that. This should trigger it.
Yeah.
The way it's worded, I don't see a way around it.
Yep. Yeah. So definitely this allows you to, you know, possibly re-churn one of your on-fielded characters as well, even if it's not super expensive. You know,
yeah.
You're, I mean, I think we've got, what, like Storm was a big one, you know, from AVX set. you know, you send her out, you try to get her killed, your opponent lets her through, she ends up in used, you transfer power her back out. So that could be really cool. And it has a really neat global where you pay one shield to swap the attack value of one of your characters with that of one of your opposing character. So that can also really nasty it up a bit if you, like, especially after blockers have been assigned.
Yes. And before, I'm gonna just answer this question months before it actually comes out. Yes, that ends at the end of turn. And if you ask us that after this set comes out, I'll refer you to this episode. It's just, I can see, somebody's going to ask that, and I know it is. And I won't make fun of whoever that person is. I want them to ask it, but I'm going to tell them to just listen to episode 15.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, it says it in the rules, but I don't think it's, like, super as clear as I would have hoped.
Yes.
I'm thinking about it. I did not post it in our news article.
But exclusive.
Exclusive. Well, it's not really an exclusive because I'm, you know, totally cribbing off the stuff that came from Roll to Crit. They got to open up the entire starter kit, and they didn't take a lot of photos because they didn't realize how exclusive their exclusive was going to be. But one of the photos that they did post had kind of some blurry rules in the background, and those rules included something that actually described the turn order in, like, a boom, 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 boom detail, where it said, like, characters attack, effects that come from attacking resolve, characters block. You know, I was just like, yay!
Like a concise listing of the attack order and stuff?
Yes.
That's wonderful.
I was so excited. There's a link to it from the article I did about Gen Con. Go look there. Send some page views their way. They deserve it. But, you know, and it's in the background. It wasn't really featured, but it was very definitively, like, you attack. Stuff that happens from attacking happens. Your opponent blocks. Stuff that happens from your opponent blocking happens. And so it just very clear, much more clear and concise turn order. So fingers crossed for for seeing some more of that throughout, because that was the only page of the rule book we got to take a look at. So I am hoping that means those rules that have been plaguing us through AVX will be, and you can print out and frame that one for when you go to tournament.
Well, that'll answer a lot of questions. I just wanted to say about transfer power for a minute. That I think that probably states my desire for a tutor.
Yeah, she is a tutor.
That's pretty much the right way to do it in this game.
I called her she because it was like Mystique Marvel on it, but it's an action. It's not a character. It does not have a gender. Unless it wants to have a gender, then it can have a gender.
Yeah, that's the tutor I wanted. So,
thanks,
so far
WizKids.
I really like this.
But is the tutor we need?
it's the tutor we deserve.
Thank you. Yes. And with that note, DC Dice Masters confirm. Oh, never mind. So, yes. That's some good stuff, I think. The only question I really have is, why did they show so much at San Diego Comic-Con? And maybe somebody who's listening knows a lot more of WizKids modus operandi than I do. But why show so much at SDCC? I know that they're very comics tied with HeroClix and everything else. But when you have this big of a convention happening just a couple of weeks afterwards, not that San Diego Comic-Con isn't big, but this is a specifically a gaming-focused thing. Fantasy Flight didn't unveil their couple of Star Wars things at a sci-fi convention. Fantasy Flight revealed them at Gen Con, and everybody eagerly awaits the in-flight report. I really am just curious as to why they chose to reveal so much at San Diego Comic-Con, really at the expense of any kind of attention at Gen Con.
Yeah, I mean, and I think, interestingly enough, Roll for Crit, the guys who got to... Sorry, I'm going to turn my bonging off. It keeps bonging in the background. Other than Roll for Crit, who got to open up the starter kit, the display that they had, and it was just pretty meager. Yep. I mean, they could have fanned him out even a little bit more so you could get a little bit more text, you know, a little bit more, you know, tease. But instead, we, you know, the characters are barely identifiable. I actually had to work pretty hard to figure out who those characters were. And you know, the starter box, nobody really got a good look at what was inside it other than, again, Roll for Crit, who didn't take a lot of pictures because they didn't know. I mean, it makes sense to me that you would have the starter kit and, you know, a big chunk of it would be available for people to look at on a display, but that wasn't what they were doing. It's very clear that the starter kits have been printed. They're packaged, you know, at least to some extent ready to go. I mean, I don't know what kind of quantities they have, but it's clear they know what's going in the starter box, what text is on those cards, what dice is in that, you know, are in that box. So I was a little surprised to not see more peeks of that.
Yeah. Well, another thing I like right now, though, is, and this is just from looking at some pictures here, but I think it looks like right now there are just 3 2-cost characters. Obviously, the Falcon that we talked about, the Ant-Man, and there's one other that I can't see what it is because it's in the back of a stack.
Yeah, it seems to be Storm. I mean, I would not bet large quantities of money, but I would bet small quantities of money that that's Storm.
Yeah, we know it's an X-Man, and we know it's a mask, and we know that it has a burst.
And we know that it... we don't know it has a burst. That's Toad.
Is that Toad? Oh, you're right. You're right. Never mind. Just kidding.
Of course, but, I'm right. Yeah. We also know...
Yeah, it's definitely a darker dye. That's true. Yeah, and I like that. And again, I hope that goes more towards what we were talking about earlier. Just a few... 2-cost characters. The vast majority that we're seeing, I think, are 4s and 5s. A few 3s here and there, and a lot of the 3s seem to have some utility, or to be things that like you will want to set up a combo with some bigger things. So, I don't know. I really have hope that this is going to be riding the ship. I just hope it's not too little, too late. Some people were concerned about the rules. Some people had some negative experiences at some of the earlier tournaments that were held. At Gen Con, and you can read about that on Board Game Geek, and we'll probably talk about it on the site here too, to be honest, because it's worth talking about. I hope it's not too little too late. I think that from this discussion, I mean, honestly, I've been kind of like about things lately, and you know, as you guys know, and I think talking about a lot of these things, my spirits are a little bit lifted as far as what we might see with Uncanny here.
Yeah, I mean, I do think, I mean, whether or not it was an understanding that came after starting to watch competitive play start to form right after AVX came out, or whether it's like something they realized over the course of playtest of AVX, but after it was all printed, there seems to be some dialogue, if you will, with the AVX set. And a lot of it seems to be none of that now, since we did see so much front-heavy meta. It looks like we're hopefully working to correct that. You got your 2s setting you up. You got your 3s and 4s kind of starting to clean that up. And then the 5s and 6s getting, and I presume some 7s, really hammering it home. And I think it's more in keeping with the play that they meant to get in the last one, just didn't realize how slanted it was going to get towards a couple of cards.
Yep.
That sure is something you notice there, Katie. Yep. Thanks a lot.
That sounds like an observation.
That sure is a thing.
With conclusions and everything.
I know. I'm amazing.
We've always said so.
Yes. Do I have any more thoughts? Thoughts.
I think that about sums it up for me.
I don't know. I still totally have to brag that I guessed that it was Magneto in the starter box, and I accurately guessed the small runs of characters that the super rares were going to come from. Awesome! Math nerd, ho!
Totally staring at tiny little numbers for like.
I know. I stared at
4 hours.
I did. I stared at tiny little numbers from San Diego Comic Con, and I figured out what the numbers were and what the runs would be, and I was like 100% accurate. I mean, I guessed wrong, but the things that were not guesses
were accurate. Right.
Yes. Yes. And I did it before we got a full card list.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty cool. In the future, again, I want WizKids to put some more weight on Gen Con, you know, because it's Gen Con. I know how tied you are to comics, WizKids, but man, you're doing board games. It doesn't make a ton of sense to me. But, you know, they really are a young company, and they really are not anywhere near as big as like a Fantasy Flight or anything like that. They're not like, they don't know a lot of things that can happen with this, and they've never had a game catch fire like this one did. I mean, it hasn't ever happened to them. It's a neat thing, and I just hope that their attempts to handle it aren't, you know,
that they didn't squander it.
Yeah.
I think definitely between SDCC and Gen Con, we've seen kind of like a moderate PR fumble. I think that rather than this like tease of like probably close to 20 some cards, that we would have instead like really gotten to know 10 cards, you know, especially ones that could help illustrate that, like, yes, we learned, we're, you know, I mean, at least a conversation that the harder core fans would be able to appreciate. Well, people who weren't hardcore fans could go, ooh, pretty pictures.
Yep.
Yeah.
Hey, they've got my new favorite guy.
Yes.
Or gal.
Yeah, I mean, and the other thing is, I mean, I had to go, like, hunting for old comic photos to figure out who some of these were. And, I mean, at least fan it so that you can see the names.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, it seemed like they were deliberately obscuring information there, and that's just like, why would you do that? Unless for some reason you can't give out the information? Have they not gotten the license for Namor yet?
The only thing I can figure is that they don't want people to, like, get... There's a Vassal module for Dice Masters. I downloaded it, I've installed the module. I have no idea what the heck I'm doing with Vassal. It doesn't... I'm sorry, I'm a fairly tech-savvy guy, but I have no idea what I'm doing with Vassal. But maybe they don't want people to, you know, hit the ground with that too quickly. I mean, as soon as the set's released, just like we saw with Avengers versus X-Men, everybody tries to break your game as fast as possible. I mean, it's just what happens. It happened with that deck-building game, A Few Acres of Snow, when people discover the Halifax Hammer. It happens all the time. Maybe they just want to delay that as long as possible. I don't know. I could just be, you know, talking out my butt here. But
not a clue. But seriously, WizKids, next time show us the names.
Yeah.
And what's with the no Emma? I'm pretty sure there wasn't even a single thing of Emma in this, as far as I can tell. Possibly on the bottom of the crappy Ant-Man. Possibly on the bottom of the Ant-Man stack. And... But I'm not even sure that's Emma. I just think it might be. I mean, everyone loves Emma. Like, well, not everyone. But, you know, very, very popular character. Going to be one of your super rares.
Nice-looking die.
Very shiny die. And not to be too crass, has some aesthetic appeal to go with her. So, people in general are... you know, attracted to her character for one reason or another. So it seems like that would be a similar level of draw to the Spider-Man character, who has more draw from the, like, cool side, you know, where people just like the character. Marvel's most popular character, of course,
from
is Spider-Man. From
being
Spider-Man. Spider-Man is popular for being Spider-Man. And definitely the most popular solo character Marvel has in their stable. Unfortunately, they loaned him to Sony. Bad move. So, you know, they have to make do with, like, the Avengers.
The Avengers who they still have the rights to. That's what the asterisk should be on there. The only, I mean, again, I just, WizKids really, I'm rooting for them to take, you know, the reins of this opportunity. And I don't know if it's too late, if it's going to be too late or not by the time they really do it. But these opportunities do come so rarely. I mean, I think back, I think it was 2004, that Days of Wonder had Ticket to Ride and Memoir 44 come out in the same year. And you have expansions and, like, reiterations of those games everywhere, to the point where, like, Memoir is probably the best known implementation of the Command and Color system, short of maybe Battle Lore, and which it was originally also Days of Wonder, frankly, and now it's Fantasy Flight. And I mean, Ticket to Ride is everywhere. I mean, everywhere. It's everybody's, like, go-to gateway game and everything else. And that was the same year. And it was those kinds of opportunities that you just don't get. And yeah. WizKids has one, you know? And
yeah, I also feel like, I mean, they need to maintain hype for another month and a half at this point. And there's not really another game show coming.
Nope.
And so,
and they haven't really been doing a lot of announcements.
Nope. Yeah, so guys, WizKids, you know, if you at all listen to this podcast, seriously, get some more PR out. Because it's pre-order time, and
you could maybe send us some dice.
That'd be cool.
Send us some dice.
Wink,
yeah.
Wink.
And so, I mean, really, there just needs to be a little bit more, you know, start showing a little bit of cards, start, you know, more than we saw at Gen Con. It's time to do that, to keep it fresh, because I see it on the boards that I frequent. Interest is waning all across the board. I know Dave has been a bit of a sad panda recently, but it's been across the board with a lot of players have gotten a little bit, okay, what now? And I think as a consequence of how small the AVX set was and how limited, based on the only being able to use one version of the character, even though there's three or four cards that belong to that character. So the permutations were a lot smaller than it would have been if it was like 130 some odd cards. So, you know, keep it fresh.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. I mean, because every card you pick, you're exactly right. Every card you pick means another two or three fewer characters that you have as an option for the next card that you pick. And that's really that really is a bit of an issue, and with the smallest sets. So yeah, my sad panda-ness stems almost entirely from WizKids' exclusive distributor Alliance, who is refusing apparently to be fair with their distribution. But that's another story for another time. Just a lot of game store folks that I've talked to. Like, if a store doesn't move enough clicks, it seems like they're not the ones who are getting enough starter sets. And I wonder if anybody else can tell us if they've noticed any kind of a similar correlation, and maybe we can put something together here. If that truly is what's happening, then I'm a bit annoyed by Alliance. So,
yeah.
Anyway, that's another story for another time.
But let's totally end it on a high note instead of Dave's sad sack low note.
No, I'm really hopeful. Oops. Sorry, I just creaked my chair.
Which, you know, I mean, I do think we need to take from this as much as there wasn't as much sneak peeks at Gen Con as I would have liked. What we did see does seem to be moving in a positive direction. And I do hope that means that WizKids will continue to learn about how to Dice Master. Like, I know you invented it, guys, but everybody needs to learn how to Dice Master.
They need to learn to master Dice Master.
Or Mistress.
Sure. Yes. All right. Yeah, no, I agree. I'm much more hopeful about the direction. Yes, where is she?
Give me Sue Storm.
Next set will be the Fantastic Three.
Yep.
No Sue Storm, sorry.
Yep.
No!
Wow, that's kind of like Darth Vader at the end of episode three. So with that, another episode of The Reserve Fool comes to an end amid Katie's protests. Thank you all so much for listening, and we look forward to talking with you again on the website, on the podcast, and other places where we talk to you virtually or otherwise. Thanks so much for listening, everybody.
See you next time, guys.
See you next time.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Oh, not again.
Is there transmission music there?
Transmission music.
Shut up! I hate you guys.
It'll be fine.